combined $7,000 worth of ads and sold $400,000 worth of roofs.
So today's guest is one of the sharpest minds in the home service space.
So it's costing us $1,500 to $2,000 a month to have this problem. We built this automation. What do you think it would cost to fix it? The cost to do that was for the month was 61 cents.
And today's here to share a story that just proves how much opportunity still exists in the trades.
Their close rate went from 28% to 30.8%, which translated to another $160,000 in sales.
If you think AI is going to kill jobs, stay tuned because this conversation might change the way you look at commerce technology.
Home services contractors have that problem.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
All right, guys. So today's guest is one of the sharpest minds in the home service space. One of the few people that who could talk about AI, philosophy, and automation in the same sentence to actually make it work all for your business. I'm talking about Adam Sant, founder of Roofing Business Partner, a company that's helped roofing contractors scale using a mix of data-driven systems, stoic principles, and AI-powered tools. He's a Christian, a father, and a builder of both a roof and a people. And today he's here to share a story that just proves how much opportunity still exists in the trades. Or if you think AI is going to kill jobs in the trades, Adam says the opposite. He believes it's going to create jobs, and he's here to explain why. Stay tuned because this conversation might change the way you look at commerce technology, growth, and the future of business. Let's get into it. Awesome.
Awesome.
Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mauricio. It's great to be here. Thank you for making the time and space for me to come and chat with you. I'm excited. We always have good conversations.
Yeah. I first met Adam, I think 7 years ago, and he's one of the few people that was actually, I learned how to do Facebook ads for roofing contractors. When I started the company, I was just doing PPC ads for contractors, right, for roofers. And eventually I started doing Facebook ads and we added a call center. But Adam was one of the few people a long time ago that had his own roofing business that was actually doing Facebook ads for himself. And he actually managed to teach other contractors to do the same as well.
Yeah, that was, I remember we were running Facebook ads in our roofing business and everybody made fun of us for it. But I didn't know how to run Facebook ads out of the box. I had to take an online course and even the teacher didn't really see a pathway to running Facebook ads for a home services business, because back then it was like weight loss and dog toys. But what happened was then when we did it, you know, in a world where you'd run most of the people talking about Facebook ads back then would run like a small amount of money, like $1,000, and they would sell like $4,000 worth of dog toys or like weight loss ebooks. So when we were like, oh, we ran $7,000 worth of ads and sold $400,000 worth of roofs, most of the market didn't know about net profit. They just saw clickbaity headlines. And so then all everybody was trying to make their name in Facebook ads back then. And so we got interviewed on a bunch of podcasts and, you know, we all of a sudden, like a year and a half later, if you looked up roofer and Facebook ad, my name showed up and I was just talking about my results in my roofing business. And then I thought, wouldn't it be cool to start a podcast? Because all these roofers started reaching out to me. So I thought maybe I should start a podcast. And I was like, I didn't know what to call it. I was a partner in a roofing business. So I called it Roofing Business Partner. That's as far as the name went. And then I just started doing it because I thought it would be kind of cool to have a podcast. And then I started helping roofers and then start this like school. And then this whole been one big accidental career. It was never intentional.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So let's get started. So why should contractors start using AI?
Well, in some ways, because everybody else is going to, right? It's a certain degree is just you have to kind of get on the bandwagon. But then it comes down to like, what is the real promise of AI? AI is really just another node on an automation. There's this kind of joke in the community that's like, when it's new, they call it artificial intelligence. And then when that becomes kind of mainstay and everybody understands it, it becomes machine learning. And then after that becomes even more mainstay, then they just call it automation, right? And so it's just the next node in your automation, in that now you have the ability to connect a tool, right? So your software and a memory to a large language model and give it context about your business so it can take action. So spoken financially, right? When you have a billion PhDs that just came on the labor market, AI, and those billion PhD level brains are willing to work in the roofing industry, that's going to bring down the cost of labor and it's going to because they increase the supply of labor, like mental labor. And so if you start adopting a mindset around synthetic intelligence in your business, you can drastically increase the revenue per employee, which is going to make your business far more defensible. And I think that this is kind of table stakes at this point. And so thinking AI first is what's happening at the top level of business. And roofing is just one of those trickle-down businesses that's the beneficiary of being old and a timeless vertical that's 100 years old and will live for another 100 years. We get the benefit of like seeing it play out in other industries and then just being there. But like anything else, the people who were there first tend to like gobble up the real estate or market share of that advantage. And I just want to like make that message clear so that roofers and by extension, the entire construction and home services industry sees that there will be new market disruptions and new leverage created that can drastically change like any individual market share. So the small people don't have to be small and the big players might not necessarily stay big.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the competitive advantages that you think a contractor, a tradesperson, a roofer can have by using AI like today?
All right. So let me break it down to like an example in my own business and then we'll kind of expand it out. So in my business, we have this process where every time contractor sends us a work to do for them, a ticket, we open that ticket, we do the work and then we close the ticket and then it sends them a feedback survey and an email. So then sometimes they don't take the survey, they reply to the email and be like, thanks, great job. And sometimes, so call it 70-30, 50-50, right? Sometimes they're like, F you, try harder. We got to like reopen the ticket. But every time they reply, our system opens the ticket and our system only has a binary decision there. If you receive a reply to a closed ticket email, does it reopen the ticket or not? It's binary. It's the only decision it gets to make because that's all the intelligence it has. Did they reply or not? There's no context. Right? Artificial intelligence allowed us to say, build a little workflow. And this workflow, no one's going to look at it in like N8N and be like, wow, so innovative. It's very, very simple. But this problem, right, of this ticket reopening meant that, okay, someone has now moved on to three other tickets and now they've got an email that says their ticket's been reopened. They don't know whether it's good, bad, what's happening. So then maybe they stop what they're doing. They context switch. So now they go, oh, I'm going to go back to this thing. And then they look at it and it was like, oh, they just said, thank you, good job. Now they go, ah, time for lunch. And then they come back and they have to completely re-engage with that third ticket. Or they forget to go back to it and then the customer's mad. And then they have to go, like, it creates this context switching problem. And so this was conservatively costing us $1,500 to $2,000 a month, just in context switching, extra hours, all this kind of stuff. So we built this very simple automation that just said, when you get a reply, if it's a positive sentiment, like read it. If it sounds like, thank you, good job, appreciate you, leave the ticket closed. If there's something else, we'll then summarize the content of the message, reopen the ticket, assign a task that says, like, this is what was happened. So then that way, the person didn't get a notification about it. They just got a task, which is like put itself onto the list. And I asked people, well, what do you think it cost me to put this synthetic brain in front of this? It was costing us $1,500 to $2,000 a month to have this problem. We built this automation. What do you think it would cost to fix it? Some people say $100. Some people say $1,000. They're like, oh, it probably cost you this much in automation cost or whatever, right? The cost to do that was for the month was 61 cents. So how many things in your business are costing you $1,000 or $1,500 a month or $500 a month that could be fixed for 61 cents.
Yeah.
So what are some practical ways of doing that? It helps to know that there's something called, like, everybody hears the word agents and AI, and there's a glossary of terms that I don't know if the listener has.
Yeah.
So we'll look at like a word like ambient agent. What is an ambient agent? So an ambient agent means it works in the background. It's like an employee. This was that agent. It's not running all the time. It's waiting for something to happen and then it takes an action and it's kind of ambient, but it makes a decision on your behalf. And then you can choose three ways that an ambient agent works. Completely autonomously, human in the loop, where it says, hey, I need your help. I just need you to tell me what to do. This is what happened. What do? You click a button, say it sends a message to Slack and you have like a yes, no, or more, right? And you can just make one of three decisions and it goes. Or human on the loop, where it just says, hey, this is what I did, but I think you should know about it. That's kind of what our 61 cent thing was. And then autonomous just means it's doing stuff and you have to like go look at it and figure out what happened. So if we think about it, well, now we kind of can start to think about what should be done. So a good example is a lot of roofing companies have an issue with like permits. Permits are something that they're spending someone to be around. You're still in Florida, right?
Yep.
So you have noise commencements and permits and midday inspections. It's a huge logistics and bureaucracy problem in the Florida roofing market.
Yes.
So a roofing company has information in their CRM that informs that through the sales process, this was collected, and then it has to go to some person who sits at a desk all day. And, you know, sometimes it's a part of their job. And if you get big enough, that is a person's whole job, is just doing permits and notice of commencements. So what does that job entail? Well, you have to log into some old ass government website and fill out a bunch of boxes, which is like, you know, name, information, address, date of start, type of material we're putting on, expected install date, like just some data that exists in properties in the CRM. And previously we were never able to automate this because the government didn't say, hey, we released our Zapier integration. So like, what do? Well, an ambient agent can use what's called a headless browser. So it's just like it sounds. It's a browser window that is headless. There's no person behind it. It just runs itself. And we can pre-program that browser to understand this government website. And so it's like, if the zip code is this, it belongs to this county. And if it's this county, the website is this. And when you go to that website, there will be these 8 boxes to fill out and this one place where you need to upload this PDF. The 8 boxes correlate to these 8 properties in the CRM, and the PDF is in this folder. Go fill out that form, and then when you're done, you're going to get a document back, or you're going to have to save you're going to get a permit number or some kind of thing. Scrape that out of the browser, copy paste, put it back into the CRM, and then like check a box or move a stage in the pipeline view, like then take an action. So that's an ambient agent. There's no human in the loop, no human on the loop. It just happened. And that headless browser, right, allows you to say, all right, well, now we used to have to pay someone, you know, 4 hours a day, every day to do this like soul crushing, completely unfulfilling, mind numbing job of copy pasting. It's unfulfilling, uncreative. And now that person doesn't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. You just save money on the labor cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
You also improve the bottom line, and you probably limited mistakes. I'm assuming. Yeah.
Well, huge issue, right? If you fall behind on notice of commencements or permits, you have to stop work on all jobs until you get caught up on your paperwork. Like you can literally have a stop work order for the entire company because of one piece of paper missing on one job.
Yeah. That's a big problem. How would you build that? I was like, you probably use N8N. Like, and if people don't know what N8N is, basically just a more advanced Zapier and Make, where you can kind of have a developer kind of create the systems for you. Is that what you probably use that to kind of build that out?
The market of, so the software is like, the short answer is yes. And the market is opening up to like, there's all kinds of new, like there's like one called Active Pieces and Gumroad, and there's so many new integration platforms coming out, agent.ai. Like there's so many of these that exist now. Yep. So you could do this with a lot because that headless browser is just a node. It's just like a block on that automation thing. It's an HTTP request, which all that means is just like a ping off of a website that says, hey, when you get a ping, go take this action. And then you go to that particular tool and build out what that action is. So you could use a lot of tools. N8N is kind of like the hot one right now. It got a big influencer network around it. Yeah. So yeah, but you could do it in Make or even Zapier if you wanted to.
Yeah, if you go on X, you'll see those screenshots of those workflows that they look super complicated. Sometimes they're not really that complicated, but they seem complicated.
They just look cool.
Yeah, they look cool, exactly. And sometimes it's really simple. If you look at it, it's like workflows and automations have been around for a long time. It's like that really hasn't really changed a lot, but it's kind of like the AI twist really, and it has changed it a little bit. It's more advanced and more unique, but that's kind of like those things are kind of been around for a long time. It's like people don't really understand that yet.
Yeah. There's this meme that goes around, and it's like mom, it's like a little boy asking his mom a question. It's like, mommy, why are we rich? And it's like, and then mom says, because daddy started calling automations agents, honey. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because like now, like things that aren't even an agent, people are calling an agent. Like, you know, to some of us, it's like one of those things where it's like, do you join the party or do you kind of like try and call it out? I my opinion on it switches daily, but yes, it is. It's just like in Make or N8N or Zapier, like you have these like nodes, these little blocks, right?
Yeah.
That connect together. And now there's just a new node that's called agent. And that agent requires 3 pink things to be connected to it. A large language model. So OpenAI's models or Gemini's models or Claude's models or X's models. And then you have a memory, short term and long term. And then you have a tool that it can use. The two exciting things, I don't know how nerdy we want to get on this, but yeah.
Yeah. Can you walk us to like a typical workflow? I know you talked about the permit one, but is there another one that you built out or you've seen clients build out that can really help improve their operations or their business that you've seen?
Yeah. So the one that like we're really excited about right now is, you know, everybody in, to me, my algorithm makes it feel like everybody and their uncle knows about voice agents. So sometimes I feel like I'm just like another voice in this like echoing stadium of people talking about it.
Yeah.
But when I talk to home services contractors, they're just seeing like an echo. So it's for me, it's not as that innovative, but the whole idea is that the ability to make it so that something answers the phone and can be helpful to a customer and then take action in your business is huge. And so essentially what we saw, we tried like 60 different tools out there that were like considered a voice agent. So all that is it's the tool that it has access to is a voice, right? And then the large language model allows it to have a conversation no different than when you chat with it. And then it has a memory short term and like, what did the person say 2 minutes ago? And also has a long term memory. Like, what is the context behind my business? Because ChatGPT can tell you what Jeff Bezos said on stage at something 20 years ago, but it can't tell you what your PTO policy is. You have to give it a knowledge base. But then when you do that and you connect it to a tool of voice, that's a voice aid or another tool, which is a phone number, right? Well, then now a ChatGPT can pick up your phone for you, essentially. Now, we tested all the tools, and the limitation that we found was that when you try and make this thing pick up the phone, it'll just say something like, oh, we're available between 9 and 5, Monday to Friday. When do you want to book? And so in practice, deploying this into a business, it was like, oh, well, then the agent would like book an appointment on the north side and then book an appointment on the south side and then book an appointment on the north side. You know, you and me, our businesses, we just go from Zoom to Zoom to Zoom to Zoom to Zoom with no drive time. But home services contractors have that problem. In the case of like roofers, also, if you're in a market where it like rains 2 days a week and you can't really be climbing around on a metal roof in the rain, well, we have to understand the context of they have a metal roof and it's raining on Tuesday. We can't go to that house on Tuesday. And the other thing is that not all the time do homeowners recognize that their address kind of is very similar to another address that might show up in the same city. Like where I'm from in a city called Calgary, you have like a 3262nd Street Northeast and a 3262nd Street Northwest. And that one character means an hour drive time difference. So it goes and looks at the house on Google Street View, takes a picture of it and confirms that with the homeowner. Like, you live in a white house with blue trim and a red door. Yes. So we tried to find a tool that could do all that and it couldn't. So we had to kind of custom build that. That is something I'm really excited about, because the numbers behind it is we had a client who was getting 369 digital leads a month. 61 of them, they had never booked an appointment. And when we investigated that, 80% of them were evening and weekend leads. So people who reached out in the evening, everybody who bought a roof would have rather bought a boat. So nobody is like, they just want to find the fastest pathway to meaningfully move towards solving their problem. And if you call them back an hour later or on Monday, it's like someone else who wanted it more has already got the appointment. And this homeowner makes an arbitrary decision whether to pick up the phone, take the call, like whatever. So this thing being able to meet people where they are, the firefighter who works nights and is shopping for a roof while he's at the fire station at 10:30 at night, sitting around doing nothing but work out and wait for a bell, you know, he needs to be able to be met where he is. And to put this intelligent thing in place allows us to do that. So then that turned around, first of all, those 369 incoming digital leads, every single one of them requires a 10-minute phone call. So we just gave their inside sales reps 3,690 minutes back for the month. Their close rate went from 28% to 30.8%, which translated to another $160,000 in sales. But then those 61 leads, like this was pretty consistent for them. They're in the Carolinas. It's a pretty like steady lead flow. So the next month they booked of those missed appointments, they solved that about 80% of the time, which at that 30.8% close rate, it translated into another, I can't remember the exact number, I'd have to go find it, but it's another, I think it was about another $100,000 in revenue. I mean, when you do a 61 times 0.8, that's going to be 48 deals times 15,000. You're talking Yeah, because like 300,000 sales, like it's a huge number. And the other big thing about AI that I have to say in this is that it allows software to move from an access, like you pay for the software a monthly to be there. Now we can have software, we get to pay for results. So the way that we priced it was instead of paying monthly for this thing to turn on or to pay for minutes of time, we just charge people for the appointments that it books. And this isn't a sales pitch. It's like, I'm trying to reframe the way that people on the other end of this podcast think about software and buying things. Is like, you get to now say, hey, I want to implement AI, but I want to pay per result. I don't want to pay for it to be on. And so the way I look at it is, when we sell this agent, it's like you're paying a recruitment fee where we're going to train this agent for your company for a month's payroll of this typical role, right, is what it costs. And then after that, that employee works 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It can take 10 calls at once if it had to, but you're only going to pay when it actually books the appointment. So if it books a spam call or calls a customer 6 times and on the 7th time it books the appointment, you're only paying for that appointment to be booked. So it allows me to kind of feel really good about what I'm selling. Because if I go way back to when I had that school for Facebook ads, what I hated was that I sold $400,000 worth of people who bought the course. 1% of people made it to the last lesson. That felt really icky. You know what I mean? Because it's like you're paying for access to a course. You bought it. You had the knowledge. Like, I could sit and be righteous about it, but it felt icky. You know what I mean? It felt icky that people didn't really get to the end of the course and I know they didn't take the benefit, because some would like get halfway through, like, can I just like hire you? It was like actually the way that we turned into an agency. That felt icky.
Yeah. And how do you actually build, do you use like the tool, what are the tools you actually use for that? Is that like HubSpot or the CRM? Yeah. And that's how you keep track of the sales and the actual like close rate and stuff like that?
So it'll work with any CRM as long as it has an endpoint for us to create a contact, create an appointment, and add an engagement, which most CRMs, like modern CRMs, have it. I was surprised your Job Progress didn't allow us to create an appointment in their system, but it'll work with any CRM that's modern and just has the 3 endpoints. And then we use 11 Labs for the voice. We use Twilio for the phone numbers. And then we build the language models. Okay. It's a mixture of OpenAI and Gemini, because we use Gemini when it interacts with Google, because it has to interact with if they don't have like something like Arrivee or a field service tool, then we got to connect to Google Calendar. It's got to look at Google Maps to calculate the drive times, and it's got to look at the either Open Weather or Google's Weather API to pull the weather data. And so we build all of that infrastructure on N8N, and then but it's like every time it's a little bit different, because if they have like,
yeah, it's a unique for each client, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, because like somebody will have like Roofl, and well, a Roofl lead requires it to be aware of the fact that there was a price, and an Angie's List lead requires a level of harassment that you would never put on a web lead. So we have to customize, and then we also have to build a knowledge base of that roofing company where it can communicate like whether they charge for inspection or not, or how they handle a realtor call. And so our prompt is about 8 pages long, which is really incredible, because that agent is like an employee that reads the 8-page part of the SOP for your business every time they pick up the phone.
Yeah. And how do you get the prompt? Do you get the prompt from the actual, like, you work with the actual client from their website, their marketing materials, from the FAQs? Like, how do you actually develop that?
So the 8-page prompt is kind of like, this is how you handle a call. So you would be really akin to like an SOP or like an employee handbook. Like if you had like an SOP for how do we do a lead intake call? What are the questions we ask? What are the variables? Like that is more the process. The knowledge base is built in a tool called Vectorize. And it's essentially like I said earlier, it knows what Jeff Bezos said 20 years ago, but doesn't know your PTO policy. So it's something called a vector database. And it's just a fancy way of saying it's just like a large table of data that allows us to give the agent a brain that basically says, when people ask a question, don't go to like the OpenAI brain, right? It's called a retrieval augmentation generation is RAG, right? RAG database. And all it's basically saying is retrieve your answer from this augmentation of your brain, which is this database that has our company's knowledge. And so there's a process of like dumping a website, their PDFs, their anything about their company. We dump it into this like intake, and then they do what's called an embeddings, which is just saying, okay, go put all this data into a way that like a large language model knows how to access it as a brain. It's simpler than it sounds, but that puts this knowledge base together that allows that agent to have a brain that's unique to the company.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about what you just said, this really applies to like most trades, like the HVAC, gazette and plumbing, pest control. They all have to drive to get to an appointment, right? It's dependent on the weather a lot of times with these trades, right? It's depending on the season, right? Depending on the zip codes, all these different things that this actually, I mean, all these trades that have like that are driven by the actual weather, by the time of the year, this is something that they can build themselves, right? It's something that can apply for them. It just has to be like customized to each individual business and trade, right? That's great.
Yeah, you get to customize the voice even, yeah, right? Like some people have like a British guy, other people have like a young girl, some people have Burt Reynolds for a voice.
Yeah. What do you think some of the fears that contractors have with AI, how do you think they should overcome them?
Well, there's this general fear that it's going to cause us to like lose jobs, right? So like when we think about the smaller contractors, they're thinking like, well, these big companies are going to come in and do all this AI stuff, and then they're going to become so much more financially effective, right? And there's this fear, but it's actually, if you just, those companies are really hard to pivot. They're really hard to like move and maneuver, and they just get a lot in their own way. And then the smaller companies, they're really in a place right now where they don't have the bureaucracy of a bunch of people. One of like the greatest adopters I've seen is a guy from a company called Action Roofing out of Canada. He is like lean, or another guy, Drake, who sells Christmas lights, ironically also out of Canada, because they shut down half the year, you know what I mean, because of the weather.
Yeah.
So they're forced to like lay off people every year and rehire people every year. So the idea of having a dormant ambient AI that just like doesn't require a layoff and doesn't require like the emotions of retraining, rehiring, recruiting, they did it. And like Action went from a 20-year-long business that did like $1.5 million a year, and then he went to $4 million in a year. And he's just embracing AI at every step of the way because he's just thinking about that. So it lends to this fear that it's going to create a lack of jobs or some kind of like job decimation. But every example of this in the past, like internal combustion engines, the internet, it's always created more jobs. It's always created more jobs. Because a great example is, if you haven't heard, if you haven't watched the news lately, maybe you haven't heard this, but like these AI companies are building their own nuclear power plants. They're building huge data centers. This is creating so much work in HVAC. Like, you know how much HVAC you need to cool a data center? Like, they want to build them in Canada because it's got natural air conditioning, right? Like, the amount of plumbing. You know what have you looked at what the size of like a, like that supercomputer that runs Grok, how big that building is?
It's massive, yeah.
A massive roof. And do you know what the cost of a leak is on, if you have water drip down on a tower that has 20 HPU 1000s in it? That's like a $2.5 million bucket of water. Like, the amount of work and the expectation of high quality construction that's going to happen as a result of this, you're going to see the greatest boom in the trades business that you've ever seen.
I agree with you. I think there will be some job loss in the white collar section. Actually, a lot of white collar jobs will be gone, I think, depending on what kind of jobs, but a lot of them, yeah.
But you could have like a roofing company is going to have less need for a permit person, but they're going to need an AI engineer. So I'll give you an example from myself personally. We have a person here named Priscilla, and she's an HR person, right? We had an employee basically do a horrible thing to us, left and stole $100,000 in monthly recurring revenue. We had to lay off 30% of our people overnight because they took two employees and $100,000 worth of clients. And I get why the clients left. We edified this person for 7 months to them. And when that person, like, and we can go to court and that's all happening, but that doesn't stop the $100,000 loss when they were like, well, we just want to follow our guy because we don't want to hurt our business, so we're going to follow this guy. I get why they made the decision. I have empathy in my heart for that, but doesn't change the fact it was hurt. Well, all of a sudden, HR had 30-40% less work to do, because when you lay off 30%, another 10-20% say, ah, I'm going to leave too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it creates people brushing up on their resume. Well, that HR person now suddenly had less work. Do we let her go? Well, she took it upon herself to go into like 3 different AI school groups. She's watching everything she can learn about AI. She's implementing HI in the HR thing, but now she's kind of moved into being the executive assistant for the director of operations here, and she's now building a private app in the QuickBooks developer workspace, and she's trying to build some kind of like automated CFO type thing. This was not her career path. She was just suddenly allowed to be creative and to be a problem solver, and I just didn't get in the way. She just She just went and pursued this on her own, and I just supported it. I just say, no, this is your job. Do your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now she's doing like six things that are completely different. And
it's amazing. Yeah.
I think that that is what you're going to see. You're just seeing this. You're seeing a decrease in need for certain things that can be automated, but then a massive need. And it's like, you literally just can ask ChatGPT to teach you how to do it. You don't have to go to school. You just be like, hey, ChatGPT, my job's being eliminated by AI. These are the skills I have. These are the problems I'd like to see solved in the world. Teach me how to make those problems better. And it will, like, it will literally just, you just keep asking it questions until you get the answer. Like,
yeah.
So I think it's going to, it is both the tool that creates the opportunity, and it is also the function of change that's creating the presence of a need for work. So I think that it's creating way more jobs than it's losing. It's just changing them. It's just changing it.
I can tell, but, man. You're very passionate about this.
That's gonna happen.
I think I'm very passionate too. That's why I started this podcast, because I've been, the last 2 years, I've been really digging deep into AI, learning it myself. At one point, I was spending like 2 or 3 hours just going on YouTube, going to different courses, and just learning it myself and using the tools. Now it's just basically empowered all parts of my business. And now the big thing for me that I use it for, and I have two people that are working on that full time, like automation person and a AI person. But for me, I use it to just to think. Really, that's the biggest thing, the biggest tool that I use. I use it to think, I use it to run better meetings, to write better scripts, just marketing, obviously marketing, all the scripts, all the technology that we use it for. But that's the biggest thing, how to use it to think better, right? That's, I think, I feel,
you
like a much
borrow
smarter.
Borrow an extra 40 IQ points.
Exactly. Like, just, you become smarter on it. You become smarter on it.
Yeah, there's a study that I heard referenced, right? And it said that if you put a really smart person in a group, right, the whole group operates at a higher resonance, like, because they're all borrowing that 40 extra IQ points. So they move through solving problems faster. Like, the proximity to a really intelligent person allows a group of people to all solve a problem faster. Well, that has just scaled out by the order of like a billion, in that now every one of us has access to that additional 40 IQ points on demand whenever we're inspired to do it, to use it. So just like you said, you can use it to think better because you can process your decision making better.
Yeah.
It's incredibly empowering for people who previously the limitation was like, I grew up in Sheboygan and I never got exposed to this. And now you can just like for $20 a month, go and be like, open my eyes, ChatGPT. Tell me what I don't know.
Exactly. And there's a couple of things. Basically, I think if you work with a team, right, especially my team, I think every business deals with this, is that there is a kind of a fear with employees using AI, right? Like, I talk about it myself. Some people in the company are using it themselves, but not really everybody's getting it to actually use it, right? And that's kind of like a typical fear that a lot of employees have. So have you had that experience before where you have like, you know, let's start using AI. You have, you know, 10 to 15 people with 20 people working for you. How do you get them to actually use AI? Have you had that before experience?
Yeah, we when the Shopify CEO sent out the letter to all his employees and said that like using AI is now like the summary of it in the headlines was use AI or you're fired. That was what Shopify's memo said. And when he said that, I had the same meeting with my team. And I had a picture of like Friday the 13th, Jason Voorhees basically saying like, this thing is coming for all of us. And I did have some resistance. I had a graphic designer who was like, you know, I went to design school for X years and like AI can't do my job. And it's like, you know, and so we had some initial resistance, and then we had some people who you're like, hey, here's an axe, chop down this tree. And they instead try and like invent a chainsaw because they just want to play with AI. So there's two sides, right? People who refuse and the people who can't just go do the job. They got to try and figure out a way to get AI to do it for them. And they'll spend 6 hours trying to solve an hour long problem because they just want to play with AI. So you have both things you have to do. I don't think I've nailed it yet. We definitely, I would say, have a probably higher degree of AI because it's just another tool, right? And the tool doesn't matter as much as the process, and the process doesn't matter as much as adoption. I've been saying that for years. So it's just another tool. But I think that if you create an environment of safety where people are free to try things and people are free to make mistakes and have the AI accidentally say the dumb thing, or, you know, maybe something comes out with a spelling error because now they're moving faster and they're not catching that the AI generated image has a spelling error. If you create the freedom for that to be okay, then people will try generally to embrace it. And you just have to, like, I think, give them the assurance that this isn't me trying to get you to do five times the work for the same amount and then fire you. It's like, no, I want you to be able to do five times the work so I can pay you twice as much and I don't have to hire the next person.
Exactly, exactly. So let's talk about marketing. What's the number one marketing KPI or metric that any business owner, like in the trades and a roofer, should look for?
Yeah, I actually learned this from a client who was very successful. He sold a health insurance for seniors business. Like they phoned home seniors and sold them like health insurance or some kind of medical plan. So his whole thing was like, how do I get to the point of pushing a button and getting a sale? That was how he treated that previous business. He sold that for $80 million. But his best friend from high school was an OC rep. So his friend from high school was like, hey, I heard you're rich. You should start a roofing company. So he started one and he went from like zero to 16 million in 18 months, and then 16 to 32, and then 32 to around 42, and they're kind of like now going through another growth. But he said to me when we were building his HubSpot, he said, Adam, I just want to get a lead for $300 that closes at 30% at a 40% gross profit that I can get the money back in 30 days, because then it's customer funded acquisition. I just have, and I said, okay, well then how do you quantify that $300 lead? So that's like his top level KPI is 300, 30%, 40% profit, 30 days, right? And then he said, I don't care what the channel is. If it's carrier pigeon, smoke signals, Facebook, TikTok, Google, phoning, door knocking, I don't care. He looks at door knocking as like, okay, how, like he looks at door knocking as marketing, not sales. And then the next level KPI was I need $15 to $50 cost per 1,000 impressions. I need 1 to 3% click-through rate. And I need 3 to 10% conversion rate. Those numbers are going to fluctuate anywhere in between. And then, so if I get a $100 lead, and when I guess we should clarify, $300 appointment or marketing qualified lead. So if he gets a $100 lead, but only one in three of them book an appointment, well then that's a $300 appointment.
Yeah.
Or if you get 30 leads at $10 a lead and only one of those books an appointment, then still a $300 appointment. So like Facebook was a terrible channel for them. They would get like tons of leads, but they would never get a hold of them. Well, they put an AI agent in place to contact those leads to decrease the burden on the humans. And then they were able to get it to the point where all those crappy messenger leads did turn into a $300 appointment. And yeah, there's 26 of them that never responded. Who cares? You got a $300 lead and your sales process closes them at 30% at a 40% gross profit. And if you can turn that into cash in 30 days, you're getting paid to service the first lead before you have to pay for it. So you can afford to buy the second lead in the same period of time.
Yeah, that's amazing. So he came up with that number, I'm sure, like through reverse. Like he basically, okay, this is what the cost is actually to actually sell the roof, right? And I need to figure out how to make a profit based on how much money I'm going to be spending on the actual qualified lead, right? So he works, I'm sure, partly backwards, right? Where he actually...
Yeah, he worked his way backwards because the average ticket at the time was like 18,000, right? So now if the price of the roof has increased to 21,000, right? Well, then maybe the cost per lead creeps up to 450 because his cost of acquisition, if you take 450 and divide it by 450 divided by 0.3, that's 1500. 1500 divided by 21,000 is 7.1%. So, you know, he's paying a lot of people want to spend 5% on marketing, and that's what they say. I want to spend 5% on marketing. It's like, that's great. Maybe you're spending 5% of your current revenue, but maybe you got to spend 7% of your current revenue to get that to eventually be more money, right?
Yeah.
So he's forward investing for market share because he's looking at it as a land grab, right? So he spends a little more money on marketing than other people, but he's not afraid of a small business. He sold his last company for $80 million. So like that's a multiple of profit. He's not even at $80 million in revenue yet. So he's investing to build something big. I don't expect everybody to think like that. It's just that you can.
Yeah. What do you think this is a very common argument. I've heard like all different like things, is opinions on this, but what do you think the average contractor should be spending on a marketing budget wise per year?
I think that number is evolving. Right now you have private equity trying to do a massive land grab because they all rushed in and they spent like, the short answer is like 5 to 10%, but like that's a huge difference, right? And it depends on the company, but like we have to think of like, what are the three tectonic shifts, like massive plates moving underneath our feet. One of them is capital constraints. Like interest rates are stuck, stagnant significant growth. We have all this like issues with the economy and capital and everything like that. So like there's just the capital markets are constrained. Second one is in my industry, roofing specifically, I don't know what it looks like in like plumbing, or I know plumbing and HVAC see this, but I don't know, like arborists, you know, but private equity is coming in and their whole mode is to buy a company for 2x, smash a bunch of them together, and then sell them for 5x or 3 and 7 or 5 and 13, right? They're just trying to create value and then package all up and sell it. And they do this over and over again until it eventually becomes like Ford, Dodge, and Chevy of roofing, and they're on a public market. So that is creating this like thirst for growth at any cost. Yeah. And so they're like slashing costs everywhere to try and pump more money into marketing because they're just trying to win the race of that next exit before another company does. So they're willing to like burn cash on marketing because it for them, that's value creation.
Yeah.
So you're competing in that market. And then the third tectonic shift is AI, right? Is like orders of efficiency. So you see private equity has money. So they don't have a capital constraint. They have money. They don't have to go get it. They have it. Some of them use leverage, but for the most part, they have access to capital like we don't. Then they also have a different incentive, right? They're getting a multiple on the sale. They're not necessarily worried about being around for 30 years and building a legacy. They just have multiple expansion. And then AI is something that they can invest in to say, well, if I can bring this cost down 2%, I can immediately take that money and put it into my marketing budget. And then you have to compete in that market either by being more effective or just spending more money. And so you either have to get more bang for your buck or you got to spend more bucks. So you have to decide which one of those two things you are. And that might mean that, you know, the guy who's willing to get on Facebook Live every single day, twice a day, can get more bang for a buck. They can spend 5, but be more effective. And then equity will just bury a market in cold callers and flyers, but they're going to spend 7.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a tough thing because what I've seen is it's the rising, the cost is rising everywhere, right? And on ads, it gets more expensive to acquire a customer in Google, on Facebook, all these channels. There's more competition. There's more people doing LSA. Like it's competitive everywhere, right? So it's getting more and more competitive. So it's tough because a lot of contractors are hesitant to spend the required amount sometimes to be successful. I think based on my research, you say 5 to 10%. I say very few contractors are actually spending that amount. I would say probably the average is 1%.
Oh yeah, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
But like we did a secret shop of roofing companies. We built an agent that sent to 2,000 contractors that basically that headless browser thing. It logged on to 2,000 roofing company websites at 7 o'clock at night on a Friday, and it filled out the contact form, sent the lead, and we used a fake email and a fake phone number, and we monitored the responses. And so it says like, who was it? It's like New Orleans or no, Louisville, Kentucky, right? There were 61 contractors there. Bone Dry Roofing was like the runaway winner on lead response. Instant response, instant human call, instant email, multiple attempts to follow up, very perseverant, lots of like really good engaging emails. Then there was like 3 other companies that were kind of like in the top, and then it was like 50 feet of crap below that. So Bone Dry Roofing doesn't need to find a new marketing agency. They know what they're doing, and they don't need me to come and build them a system or an automation. They know what they're doing. But the problem for the 50 feet of crap below that is to say that they just have a bad lead response or bad marketing is too surface level. And I like to relate it to things that people can understand because they're the person that if you or me or any marketer cold called them, they'd be like, oh, you guys call me all the time. I get all these calls. Everybody promises they can do that. They're crusty to sell marketing to. Well, if you saw most of these contractors, when you look at them online, you can see that they're doing a shitty job. Like you or me or anybody in the space, like in the service side of this industry, we can see what they're doing and we can see that they're doing it wrong. If you saw 12 400 pound people sitting on the side of a sidewalk and they were like 400 pounds just standing there eating ice cream, if you're in the personal training, health space, health food, mindset, coaching business, you would eventually figure out, hey, on Brown Street, there's like 12 400 pound people standing there eating ice cream. And every day, somebody would walk up, hey, I can teach you to eat better. Hey, I can teach you how to work out. Hey, I can teach you how to get your mind right so you can see and believe in yourself to lose weight. Hey, I can teach you how to walk 10,000 steps a day. Have you tried buying a step counter? Have you tried buying a walking treadmill? Have you tried like this or that? I can help you find groceries. I'll cook for you. I'll do a meal planning service. After a week, they'd be like, oh, there's all these people coming all the time. And like, I tried it a few times.
It didn't work.
It's like, it's like, great. Did you commit? Like, how long did you do it? Like, well, I walked for 30 days and I didn't have a six pack. Okay, well, it takes longer than that. Well, they told me it would be. It's like, that's because they're trying to sell you. But they would get crusty to deal with. But it's like, the reason that you're getting these calls is because it's obvious that you're not solving the problem. problem because everybody can see it. And so you still need to be sold the solution, because anybody who's in the business of selling the solution knows where to find you, what to look for, and you display the traits of the problem. And so it's like nobody's calling Bone Dry to sell them an AI agent. Nobody's calling Bone Dry to sell them marketing because they already got it figured out.
Yeah, and they're one of the biggest guys out there that I've read. I mean, it's called I call it curb appeal, right? I think contractors instantly understand that if you show up in a rusty old truck, right, it's gonna hurt their sale process, right? It's gonna hurt their possible sale. But a lot of times, if you have a crusty old website that looks ugly, that's a perception that that these customers are having when they see you online. It's like an old rusty old truck. It's not trustworthy, right? That's why it hurts contractors first, right? So I really think it's also a big educational thing too, as well. A big educational thing. It's a mindset issue as well. And at the end of the day, there is a lot of marketing companies out there that overpromise and underdeliver. That's a big part of it as well. But so besides those, like, can you talk about some of the biggest? I want to hear this. Like, what is the most successful campaign that you ever ran for yourself, or for a company or a client that you had, like a marketing campaign?
Yeah, the best one I've ever run was a $89. Gutter cleaning ad. We took the lesson. They had a door knocker who, to knock on doors, he was saying, "Hey, I'll clean your gutters for $99. And he got on roofs a lot more when he offered to clean the gutters for $99. He knocked 100 doors and said, "Do you want a free inspection?" He'd get one or two. He knocks on doors and says, "Hey, I'll clean your gutters for $99. He'd get 10. Then when he was up there, he'd be like, "Hey, by the way, did you know you have damage? Want to file a claim?" So let's now apply leverage to that, run that as an ad, $99 gutter cleaning. So then now we just created a gutter cleaning service, and I learned this lesson like 6 years ago too, because a guy had his dad, who's an older fella, and just gave him a job doing gutter cleaning. And his dad would be like, "Well, you know, your roof's looking kind of bad. Talk to my son," right? So I had two examples of this in real life. And you all hear about like Alex Hormozi and lead magnets and stuff like that. It's like, what is a lead magnet? It's either a partial solution to a problem, a temporary solution to a problem, or the sudden awareness of a problem. And it's usually where you give a high amount of value for a low cost to get the lead. Well, that gutter cleaning thing, it just got the same customer, where you got customer funded acquisition. It costs you $50 for the lead, but you're getting paid $99. So you're paying to get the lead so you could dump as much money. We've had other campaigns that maybe got more leads or were roofing. I want a roof leads. But the thing is that like kind of ping pong two-step approach created a profitable lead generation.
Got it. And then you basically ran it to a landing page. And then you have a checkout form on there, like where people can actually pay online
so it meant that we had to like convince certain salespeople that to get those leads they had to be willing to go and like spray down a gutter and unplug a drain. You know what I mean? It wasn't a hard job to do. And then you charged more money if there was more gutters. Like it just you had to create a company that was willing to do that, but then you created a marketing department that was profitable. Like the salespeople made more money because they didn't have to go knock doors. Now they just scaled that up, and then but they had, instead of spending 5 hours knocking doors to get two doors to let them on a roof, they spent an extra 35 minutes on a house cleaning gutters. You know what I mean? But now they didn't have to knock anymore. So it was a change in just effort. What effort are you putting in to create the opportunity for your sale? Is it walking or is it cleaning?
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So yeah, where can people find you? Where should people look you up?
I found out recently that more of my best customers all seem to like X. And I don't go on X a whole lot other than like read the news. You know what I mean? Like I don't participate and post much. So I'm like, this is like the first time I'm asking this, but like follow me on X at Roofing Partner, or you can just go to roofingbusinesspartner.com. But like, I'm just like, I want to find some friends on X. And I found that like, I was like, wait a minute, more of my customers are on Facebook, but more of my best customers are on X. So if people are on X, I'd love to connect.
Are you going to start posting content there?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start I like to write. And so I want to participate more there. So I'm trying to give myself some dopamine hits for being on there.
Yeah, I think I've started writing on Facebook again, but I think X, I want to start doing it too as well. It's a good platform. I do see a lot of successful contractors are on it, surprisingly. But I mean, I think Facebook has been the number one where people find each other. I think, but I think X is the next big one. But Adam, man, it was awesome. Thank you for everything. I really appreciate it.
Of course, man. It was awesome to be here. Thank you, and have an awesome day.
Thanks, man. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.